Morning, everybody. Say, you folks who are back there and can't see me, come on in this room. There's lots of space. Don't be shy. Come on in. Cushions and chairs both. So today I'm going to continue my talks about faith, heart, mind, embossment, or faith, heart, mind, inscription. And this is a series that I've been giving, and we're in retreat now. So I gave a talk yesterday about one of the lines, and I'm going to talk about another line today. So since we're in retreat, after we're done, there's no coffee, there's no tea, there's no conversation. People will return to their facing the wall and have their own conversations, which actually is a no-no, but they'll do it anyway. Because it's the human consciousness, right? Human consciousness. So yesterday I talked about the line, in the deep mystery of things as they are, we are released from our relations to them. We're released from our relations to them. In the deep mystery of the things as they are. And we'll never understand this mystery, but we can go all the way into it. And when we go all the way into it, there is a release. And then there is... the seer is the seen. The seer is the seen. The hearer is the heard. The smeller is the smelled. The feeler is the field. Or the felt. Well, the field. The field. Okay. And this is something that we could say has been passed down, but it's innate, but you have to go into the mystery first. You have to go into the darkness first. Anyway, that's my talk yesterday, which I could give over again, I suppose. My talk today is the next line. When all things are seen with equal mind, their timeless essence is appreciated. When all things are seen equanimously, evenly, their timeless essence is appreciated. So this is a process that we go through in Buddhism, in Buddhist life. A process of waking up to this seer is the seen. We wake up to this. And when we wake up to this, it's not an experience that I have. If I have the experience, the seer isn't the seen. It's I'm thinking, oh, I had an experience. When the seer is really the seen, there's no trace of anything else. No trace of anything else. When the hearer is really the heard, there's no trace of anything else. And that's your innate nature. Believe it or not. Believe it or not. You can choose not to believe it. I don't care. Well, actually, I do care. I want you to believe it. Because if you believe it, then you might act on it. You might actually practice. So the process of waking up to this, to just this, the seer as the seen, the process. Well, the Lotus Sutra, not my favorite sutra, but I'm getting to know it, talks about the process in one of its analogies, one of its parables, probably one of its two or three most famous parables. So I will read it. It starts off with Shariputra. All that means Buddha is teaching Shariputra, one of his main men, one of his 10 main men. Shariputra, the bodhisattva, the main man, or disciple, he's not a bodhisattva, of wisdom. He's teaching Shariputra. Shariputra, suppose in a certain kingdom, city or town, there is a great elder, old and worn, of boundless wealth, and possessing many fields, houses, slaves, and servants. His house is spacious and large, having only one door, and with many people dwelling in it, 100, 200, or even 500 in number. Its halls and chambers are decayed and old, its walls crumbling, the bases of its pillars rotten, the beams and roof tree toppling and dangerous. On every side, at the same moment, fire suddenly starts, and the house is in flames. The sons of the elder, say 10, 20, or even 30, this was an active guy, are in this dwelling. So here we are. Here's the scene is being set. Scene is being set. And this is about us, right? This is about us. This is about the world that we create in our through our thinking, through our delusion, through our fear, through our neediness, through our greed. A world which the rafters aren't holding. Well, look at what's happening worldwide. Are the rafters holding? This species seems to be on its way, possibly doing itself in. And that's a product of ourselves, of our own mind, of our own psyche. So it's we who have produced global warming, right? It's not those other people. It's us. It's us. And so it's crumbling. But it also inside, we're trying to keep it together. I think Freud was right when he said the best thing ego can do is to control the animal, to control the horse. That was Freud's analogy. We have the libidinous impulses coming up all the time. Security, belonging, power. The libidinous impulses coming up as human beings, coming up. And then on the other side, we have what? All of the shoulds. I should be good, I should be kind, I shouldn't be doing this to her, even though she made me mad. I should. And what's the role of ego? Well, the role of ego in Freudian psychology, but I think it's right, is this the mediator. Hold it all together for a little while. Hold it all together until the next therapy session or whatever. Freud believed in long-term therapy, you know, for himself and all beings. Yeah. So that's the human situation. Human situation. That we're all in this situation. The introduction to the story. All right. The sons of the elder, say 10, 20, or even 30, are in this dwelling. The elder, on this, seeing this conflagration spring up on every side, is greatly startled and reflects thus, though I am able to get safely out of this burning house, yet my children in the burning house are pleasurably absorbed in amusements, without apprehension, knowledge, surprise, or fear. Though the fire is pressing upon them, and pain and suffering are imminent, they do not mind or fear and have no impulse to escape. Shariputra, the elder ponders thus, I am strong in my body and arms. Shall I get them out of the house by means of a flour vessel or a bench or a table? Again, he ponders, this house has only one gate. Moreover, it is narrow and small. My children are young, knowing nothing as yet, and attached to their place of play. Perchance they will fall into and be burned in the fire. I must speak to them on this dreadful matter. Warning them that the house is burning, and that they must come out instantly, lest they be burned and injured by the fire. Having reflected thus, according to his thoughts, he notifies his children, come out quickly, all of you. Though the father, in his pity, lures and admonishes with kind words, yet the children, joyfully attached to their play, are unwilling to believe him, and have neither surprise nor fear, nor any mind to escape. Moreover, they do not know what is the fire that he means, or what the house, and what he means by being lost, but only run hither and thither and play, glancing at their father. So this is Act 2. Well, I guess this is Act 1. First we set the scene, and this is Act 1. So Act 1, again, human situation, right? Things are not going so well. So as we were saying in our class on Wednesday night, we choose our intoxicant of choice. Everybody has their intoxicants of choice. And in our Wednesday night class, people listed their intoxicants of choice and then broke into small groups. I didn't go around taking notes, so I don't know what they said. We all have our intoxicants of choice, right? And sure, we give up drugs and alcohol. That's cool. That's good. Those are the most deleterious intoxicants. And then we get into more neutral intoxicants. But they're still intoxicants, aren't they? They still enable us to live a life which is not really here, which is not really the seeing is the seen, the hearing is the heard, the smelling is the smelled. That's the real life. That's the real life. Because we intoxicate ourselves because there's so much pain. And if our intoxicants are positive intoxicants, maybe we intoxicate ourselves with all the lists. First thing in the morning, we have a list of things we're going to do. Right? Oh, check them all off. Where's my list? Oh, I lost my list. Anybody have a list as an intoxicant? What else do you intoxicate yourselves with? Well, there's all the common, ordinary ones, you know. But let's get the more sophisticated ones. Accomplishment. In my family, accomplishment. Accomplishment. Intoxicated by accomplishment. So that you don't have to pay attention to anything. You don't have to pay attention to your psyche. You don't have to pay attention to your pain. Because always doing stuff. To accomplish. Right? What others? Well, I should have gone around and collected lists on Wednesday night. I kind of wanted to sit in the groups, but I thought, well, if I do that, they probably won't be honest. So.
For me, one of them is music.
Music?
Yeah, I listen to a lot of music just to kind of indulge a lot of emotions.
Yeah, music is. And that's a healthy intoxicant, but it's still an intoxicant. Pardon?
I'll sit on the computer for like a couple hours and
out the music. Oh yeah, and of course the computer itself is our 21st century intoxicant, or some variation of it, the iPod or whatever the next variation is going to be, right? And there was some article recently about the number of hours the average American who has a computer spends on it every day. It was really kind of phenomenal. Was it? Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's only getting more severe, right? Anyway, you know this. We know this. We know it, but we get lost. We get lost because we're in pain. And it's so easy to get lost. It's so easy just to go back to that relief that we get. and we open the refrigerator, metaphorically or literally. Okay, Act 1. Act 2. I don't know how many acts there are. We'll see. Then the elder reflects thus. This house is burning in a great conflagration. If I and my children do not get out at once, we shall certainly be burned up by it. Let me now, by some tactful means, cause my children to escape this disaster. Knowing that to which each of his children is predisposed, this is not my favorite translation, but that's okay. And all the various attractive playthings and curiosities to which their natures will joyfully respond, the father informs them, saying, the things with which you are fond of playing, so rare and precious, if you do not come and get them, you will be sorry for it afterward. Such a variety of goat carts, deer carts, and ox carts is now outside the gate to play with. All of you must come quickly out of this burning house, and I will give you whatever you want. Thereupon, the children, hearing of the attractive playthings mentioned by their father, and because they suit their wishes, everyone eagerly, each pushing the other and racing against each other, come scrambling out of the burning house. Act 2. The things with which you are fond of playing, so rare and precious, such a variety of goat carts, deer carts, and ox carts is now outside the gate to play with. So, yana is the Sanskrit word, yana, for vehicle, cart, yana. So the first one is the goat cart. When I was young, we used to have goats. I actually milked 10 goats for 2 years. You know, I'm old. I've had lots of different experiences in my life. 10 goats we had. Milked them for 2 years with my friend. The goat cart. One of the things about goats is that goats really listen. They really watch and really listen. Really pay attention. In the morning when I used to go out to milk the goats, they would already be watching and listening when I got up. I could see them out there watching and listening and hearing me getting up. And of course, they got fed the same time they got milk. Getting milk was nothing for them, getting fed. Watching and listening. Very, very attent. Seem to be very open. Very open, very attentive. So that's the Shravaka, right? For those of you who have been studying, right? Or should have been studying Buddhism. Some of these people are supposed to study Buddhism, you guys. The Shravaka, the listener. That's the cart that he used to get some of the children out of the house. Something for them to listen to. A teaching. Listening to the teaching of the Lotus Sutra. Listening to the teaching of Huineng. Listening to the teaching of Katagiri Roshi. Listening to the teaching that has been coming up for generation after generation. It helps us get out of our house. Helps us get out of our burning house. Helps us put away our intoxication just for a little while and get out of the house. Look at all of you here Sunday morning. You could be off intoxicating yourself and you're here. Pretty good. Pretty good. You got out of the house, right? Literally. The listener. And of course, as I said on in a class on Wednesday, my first teacher, Suzuki Roshi, when he talked about the precepts, the one he liked to talk about was, do not indulge in intoxicants. That's the one he talked about the most. And then he said, and the main intoxicant I want you to not indulge in is the intoxicant of my talks. And then, of course, we got more intoxicated by his talks when he told us that. You know how it is? You know how it is? Of course, we are kind of needy human beings. We're kind of needy. All of us. So the Shravaka, the listener, the Shravakayana, the vehicle of the listener, the listening cart, the cart that helps us listen, so that at some point the listener is the listened to. At some point, if you really listen, the listener is the listened to. This is not something you need to read about. Don't need to read about this. The listener is the listened to. But this is hard for human beings to get this. It's hard. I know it's hard. It's hard for human beings to get this. So this vehicle, the listening vehicle, we're so lucky to have it. We've got so many wonderful tapes of Katagiri Roshi and a new book coming out. Wonderful talks by Suzuki Roshi. And books. Books, books, books everywhere. Be careful. Be careful. I won't say another word about that. And what does Wei Ning say about the Shravakayana, the listening vehicle? Vehicle for listening. He says it's the first defilement. He calls it the first defilement, right? Haven't we been studying this? Why? Why? Because usually when we listen, we just listen through our filter. We just listen from the known, from what we know, and try to put it into what we know, try to accommodate it into what we know. And our listening is not the kind of listening that Buddha is talking about. So that cart then is called the first defilement by Wei Ning, who's kind of a tough guy, right? The second cart is the deer cart. The deer cart. So some of the children come out when they hear that, when they hear that there's going to be a goat cart. Then some of the children come out when the deer cart. He says, oh, there's a deer cart here for you to play with. And what's the deer cart? Well, some of you can probably figure this out or maybe even know it. The deer cart. Think about a deer. Think about a deer in the woods. Think about how quietly the deer moves in the woods. Think about how lithely the deer moves in the, through the fields at dawn, at dusk. Think at how gently the deer is when it just is with its doe and with its little fawns. That's the deer. That's the Buddha mind, the still mind, the mind of Zazen. Called the Buddhayana, the Buddhayana. That's the mind that we discover when we go beyond listening to actual practice, to actual practice. Because usually listening is not going to be enough unless you are a rare being because you have too much static. So you have to have a daily practice and retreat practice. Retreat practice and daily practice. Daily practice and retreat practice. till you get really bored. and much beyond that, much beyond that. It's true. I said I'd been around, you know. And then you have an opportunity to inhabit stillness, the stillness of a deer, right at the edge of the forest. Right at the edge of the forest, you know how the deer just blends into everything? Just blends in. And how alert it is. And how it seems to be part of the lake that is reflected in it, and part of the sky. Pracheka, Buddha, Buddha Yana, the vehicle of the Buddha. But some of you know already what the limitation of this card is. It's a beautiful card. It's a wonderful card. I could sit here forever. I never want to go back home again. Because here is my home. Right here is my home. If my body just doesn't give me too many problems. But then I can just come back to being with my old frail body. Be nice to it. But Wei Ning calls the deer cart what? What does he call it? The second defilement. Oh, our old friend Wei Ning. What a cheery guy. After we've been having pain in our legs for 25 years, he tells us the second defilement. Give me a break. The second defilement. The Pracheka Buddha Yana. The second defilement. The vehicle of the Pracheka Buddha. Well, Pracheka means what? What does it mean? Some of you who've been with me before. Pardon? Pardon? It means private, actually. That's very close. Yeah. P, private. Private. Solitary is a good translation, too, but actually literally private. So the Pracheka Buddha, the deer, is wonderful in the forest, is wonderful by the lake, is wonderful in the wilderness. But the deer, when he or she enters the village, loses her calmness, loses her just natural litheness, and gets kind of freaked out by all that noise. Ugh, too much noise around here. It's a little freaked out. Gotta go back to that beautiful natural place where the deer lives. How could human beings do those towns anyway? What are they up to, those human beings? Back to the natural, pristine environment. So that's why Wei Ning calls it the second defilement. Because we all have to go back. We all have to go back. You can live out in nature for a long time, but sooner or later you have to go to town to get supplies. And somebody's going to be arguing. Somebody's going to try to charge you more for whatever. Something. Something. So that's the second card and the second defilement. That's why in the 21st century, in this country, we have a chance to make Zen really come alive. Because all of us, whether we're priests or not, we're also in the world. And if we're going to have an impact, it has to be in the world. So I'm moving on now to the third card. The third card. The third cart is the ox cart. What about the ox? The ox? Ox does fine in the country. Ox does fine in the village. The ox does fine in the city. The ox can even hang out in uptown. At rush hour, just look around. Just look around. Just look around. That's the ox. And that way, the ox can help a lot of people. A lot of people, just by her presence there in uptown at rush hour. Just by being there. Just by being there. A lot of people gather around the ox and want to sit on the ox and listen to the ox, even though the ox has nothing to say. Right? Right? That's taking our practice into the world, right? Taking it into the world. Those of us who've been in retreat, well, we have, what, an hour and 25 more minutes. An hour and 25 more minutes. So, important vehicle. What's it called? The Bodhisattva Yana, right? The Bodhisattva Yana. Yana vehicle? Bodhisattva. The Bodhisattva wants to help all beings. The ox helps all beings, not by doing something particular, but by just being there in the midst of other people's frenetic chaos, even her own frenetic chaos. She can just be there in stillness, but she doesn't think of it as stillness. She's just there, just there, just there. Well, that's pretty good, isn't it? That's pretty good. Good for us. We've got three carts now. We can move between them. Sometimes we can use the ox cart, and sometimes the deer cart, and sometimes the goat cart. The goat cart's still important, because sometimes we need to really listen. But listening isn't enough. We have to do more than listen to really express what's in our heart. But what does Wei Ning say? He's a cheery fellow, isn't he? You wanna, shall we hang out with him, Cindy? So the Bodhisattva Yana, Wei Ning says, is the third defilement. Because even the ox, even the ox, sometimes identifies so much with someone's pain that he loses his stillness. He loses his stillness, even after the best zazen possible. Someone's pain is so overwhelming that he just blows it. He just blows it. Because he is trying so hard to be a good ox. He's trying so hard to be a bodhisattva. He has made the bodhisattva vow to help all beings. All beings. That's a big vow, isn't it? We just don't say we're vowing to help you guys. All beings. Or some of you guys. Some of you guys are beyond help. But those of you who are capable of being helped, I vow to help you. Oh, I'm not supposed to say that. Bodhisattva vows to help all beings. All beings. It's a huge vow. But we do it moment by moment in Buddhism. Moment by moment. Before we even vow it, we vow it. But then we get attached to it and we think we're not doing good enough. I'm not doing good enough. That being, I did an awful job with that being. I gotta maybe try another being. Get some more techniques on working with that being. Well, that's fine to get some more techniques with working with that being. But we get nervous about being bodhisattvas. We're measuring, we're evaluating, we're judging. Well, did that person respond to me well? Did they practice the way I want them to practice as the teacher around here? Are you guys practicing the way I want to practice? The way I want you to practice? I want to be a bodhisattva, but I want you to follow my bodhisattva rules. I'm the bodhisattva around here, right? Anybody know about that? Anybody experienced that? I want to be a helping professional. But geez, she really knows how to help people. And what's the deal with me? Oh, but I got her on that one. et cetera, right? Even among therapists, believe it or not, you wouldn't expect it, would you? The third defilement. But it's the third defilement because of that limitation. The limitation of our interference in just being, in just giving, in just listening. Our interference. And so, the last act. The last act. I'm going to actually, though, give a shortened version of the last act. Then the elder, seeing his children have safely escaped and are all in the square, sits down in the open, no longer troubled, but with a mind at ease and ecstatic with joy. Ecstatic with joy. To help one person, just one person, have a little more of a life. Doesn't that make you feel ecstatic with joy? Just to help one person have a little more pleasure and a little less pain. Doesn't that make you feel ecstatic with joy? Regardless of what vehicle you use, regardless of what you do, if you can help them, does it matter? If it's a goat or a deer or an ox or a cat or a dog, does it matter? Just to help one being have a life, have some joy, have some appreciation. Then the elder, seeing his children have safely escaped and are all in the square, sits down in the open, no longer troubled, but with a mind at ease and ecstatic with joy. Then each of the children says to their father, "Father, please now give us those lovely things you promised us to play with. Goat carts, deer carts, and ox carts." Shariputra. This is Buddha. See, Buddha is telling a story to Shariputra, right? Buddha says, "Shariputra, then," meaning, "Listen, Shariputra, listen." Then the elder gives to each of his children equally a great cart, lofty and spacious. Lofty and spacious. That's your original nature. That's what we call the timeless essence. It's lofty. It's spacious. And those other carts, those are great carts. But those carts are just to help us listen so much that what we listen to is listened. What we see is the seen. What we smell is the smelled. So then, when all things are seen with equal mind, their timeless essence is appreciated, just as it is. We don't have to do anything in particular, just as it is. And then the next line of the poem, "No comparisons or analogies are possible in this state where all relations have ceased." All relations have ceased. And then, you're a Dharma heir. You are a Dharma heir. There are all these charts about Dharma heirs. But you don't have to be part of some lineage. You're in the lineage of life. The lineage of life. This teaching has been passed down for eons by Buddhists and non-Buddhists, Taoists and non-Taoists, Benedictines and non-Benedictines. It's being passed down. It's being passed down. And when the listener is the listened, this is the Dharma era. We're all Dharma heirs. We're all in this lineage. It's the human lineage. It's the species lineage. It's the trans-species lineage. It's the all-species lineage. It's the rock lineage. It's the earth lineage. It's the sky lineage. We're in that lineage. We're pretty lucky. Pretty lucky to be in that lineage. We don't have to hang to some special lineage. But we can be in a special lineage, too. Just don't think it's very special. It's pretty ordinary. Thank you.